Broadcasting Incorporated.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it was a fun week this week with all of the snow.
Yeah, I guess
and,
you can say that.
You can't figure out whether we're going to get water or snow, but we survived quite well. And this week we're going to be featuring one of the foundation, one of the people, one of the individuals that contributed to the foundation of the internet, one of the original, the group of original folks working with Vint Cerf, and that would be Stephen Crocker. He actually was creator of the request for comment technique, which was used for developing protocols on the internet. I'll talk about how that RFC works and how Stephen got involved with this. And of course, the vendors have been going wild over tech gifts for Christmas. Well, we're going to review some of the tech gifts that I particularly like.
Yeah.
You know, this not, you know, I'm interested into drones. Talk
yes.
about some of the drones.
Mm-hmm.
Also, tech gifts for kids. Instead of just giving them games to play, why don't we teach them how to program and do something technical? So I wanted to talk about gifts that would inspire technical pursuits. And this last week, they just completed the Hour of Code. They were trying to get kids to start coding in school. See, there's been kind of a shift over the years. It used to be people get a computer and they would actually do things with it, program it, try to configure it. And now they just use applications on it, and I think our coding skills are dropping off, and that doesn't portend well for the future. And so now there's a lot of effort now trying to stimulate technical work instead of just using the computers. And, of course, it was a huge
giant
bag.
Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Lift it up.
Okay.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
See, okay. I'm sorry that you have to do that all by yourself because I have to push buttons, and we all know about Mr. Big Voice.
He's unionized. He won't do anything.
No.
We got an email. We got a Facebook post from Ken Hutchinson. That this was a nice post. He says, "Hi, Dr. Schertz. This is intended to be helpful, not critical."
Okay. Now
you pronounce malware. I pronounced it malware. He said, "You pronounce malware like it has two L's, like mall or hall, instead of one, as in pal or how or gal or balcony or California. I've heard you pronounce it that way for a long time, but finally I decided to write in today after you had mentioned malwaretips.com, but pronounced as if it were malwaretips.com. And that would confuse people because they would get the spelling wrong. So I didn't send this because I don't want you to be, because I don't want it to be read on the air. But actually, Ken, anything which where I make a mistake, I always read it on the air.
Yeah, Doc is good about that.
Because those are the best kind of things.
That's how you learn, right?
And I'll tell you, Ken, you are right. I'll tell you, I stand corrected. It should be malware for sure. And
As
in malicious, and I really do appreciate that feedback. Great feedback. And so whenever there's anything where I've made a mistake, I read it first on the air. Makes for interesting radio, and makes certain that I learn something. We got an email from Arnie McKechnick. "Hi, Dr. Schertz. This would be an interesting discussion topic on Tech Talk, selling the means to spread malware." See, it's a good thing that I got the correction.
You got that before you had to read that other.
That's why I put that corrective note right up front, so then the rest of the show would be correct. This would be an interesting discussion that we could have. Criminals are discussing ways to produce ransomware creation kits in order to spread this blackmailing malware. Crooksy ransomware making kit as the next big thing. What do you think? Arnie McKechnick, Davisonville, Maryland. Arnie, of course, is a longtime listener. Well, that is a very good summary of the problem. Cyber thieves, in fact, are trying to mass-produce new forms of ransomware, according to Sophos, which antivirus. Sophos referenced a discussion on the underground forums, which they monitor, and the hackers are discussing ways to produce a kit that would allow criminals to craft their own variations of the malware. Then scammers would try to extort cash by using ransomware to encrypt data, preventing access, or falsely accusing people of processing illegal materials. There are various ways, various forms where they try to ransom people. Now, this whole thing of the kit, though, was stimulated by the enormous success of CryptoLocker, which we talked about last week, where it infects your machine, it encrypts certain files with a very, very hard-to-crack encryption code. And the only way that they'll free up the files for you, if you don't have a backup copy, shame on you, is that you have to pay the ransom. And it has become the market leader in generating cash flow. And so now the cyber criminals are really saying, "Wow, let's get variations on it." Because if they just have the same same virus used over and over again, pretty soon the virus makers will figure out what its signature is, and then they'll be able to block it. So they like to have variations on this thing using various kits. And so the cybercrime kits have fueled a huge rise in the number of malicious programs circulating online, and have helped many low-tech people get involved in this high-tech crime for the first time. Now, the kits remove the need for technical skills and offer some technical support. Thanks to these kits, Sophos and other security firms saw 250,000 novel variants of malware every day.
That's amazing.
That is a problem, isn't
it?
So that is a problem, and it's amazing that we're doing this well to protect ourselves against it. But this CryptoLocker, I can reinforce, is actually something that is bad. They can they can detect it, but what you have to do is you have to make certain that you don't click on a link that you don't know. That's how it gets installed. You get an email, you click on a link, and the CryptoLocker is installed. Once it's installed, it immediately starts encrypting your files. And you really don't want to depend on Sophos or your antivirus capturing it on the fly. You want to just be very careful. And because it's hard to reclaim the files that have been encrypted, I strongly urge backups.
Yep.
And we got an email from Alex in Chantilly. Dear Tech Talk, I have a PC which I've upgraded as much as I can, and now I'm looking to get a new one. Now, my current PC has two hard drives, like 250 gigabyte hard drives. I'd like to both of these onto one hard drive on the new machine, maybe get a 1 terabyte hard drive, and then can I combine these two drives onto a single drive? Thanks, Alex and Chantilly. Well, actually, that is very easy to do. As long as the new drive has enough room for everything, you absolutely can transfer data from both hard drives onto just one. But let's clarify it. We're not talking about moving the operating system over. You can only have one operating system, and that'll be installed on your new machine. We're just talking about data files. Now, a data file would be pictures, MP3 videos, audio files, documents, that kind of thing. And you can copy all that data over. It's probably better not to copy programs over. You probably just want to reinstall the programs on the new machine. That's what I always do. I don't try to port applications from one machine to another, and I just want to copy the data. Now, there are a couple of ways that you could copy the data. The easiest way is just to hook both of your machines to your local area network, to your local router using wireless. And then you go to the one machine that has the files you want to copy from it, and you set up file sharing. And you can set up file sharing, and there you'll have it. Windows in particular now gives you a particular passcode. It won't let you share files without a passcode. It gives you a passcode. Then you can go. Then you once you have that passcode, you can then go back to the other machine, and you can go to file sharing. And when you click on the machine you want to copy the files from, you put in the passcode, and then you have access to that hard drive, and you can simply then, once you've attached the hard drive in the remote machine, you can simply copy the files over. That's actually a very easy way to do it. Now, another way to do it, but then you're copying through the wireless network. Another way to do it, you could just remove the hard drive from your previous machine, and then you could put it into an external hard drive box with the USB box, so you could plug it in. As you could make your old hard drive an external drive of the new one. For instance, I just recently did that. My wife moved from one laptop to another, and it was just, I don't know, it was just easier just to pull out the hard, because I was going to throw away the laptop anyway. It had been trashed. And so I couldn't actually copy from the old hard drive because the motherboard was shot. So I just removed the hard drive. I went, it was a SATA hard drive, S-A-T-A hard drive. I went down to Micro Center and bought a $14 external SATA box, popped it in there, and then it was a USB 3.0, and I just plugged it in and I copied everything from it. That's also a very easy way to do it. Another way to do it is if you have a backup. So, you know, I believe in, I travel with my laptop all the time. I end up using Carbonite for my backup because I like to back up to the cloud.
I hear that's really good.
So no matter where I go, I'm always backed up. So you could also, if you had a backup, you could actually just download the files from the backup. Now, if you're downloading from the cloud, I mean, it may take you a few hours because it's a fairly slow download from the cloud, but... Or you could have a backup to another hardware. Those would be all the three ways to do it. But it's very easy to do. Now, when you set up your new hard drive, if you like having two drives, like a C drive and a D drive, you could set up your new hard drive with two partitions. And the first one partition would be C, the other partition would be D. So it would be one drive, but it would be two logical drives, and it would look like your old computer. Now, actually, I don't like to do that. I like to put it all on one C drive, and then you just put all your old files in a subdirectory and sort them through subdirectories. But it's a good question. It's easily done, and it's be a good exercise for you to learn a little technology there. We've got an email from Steve in Reston. Dear Tech Talk, when I set up my machine, I set up a password for the administrative account, and then... I forgot it.
I do this all the
now,
time.
Now, since I never use the account, so it didn't make much difference, but now I need it. What can I do, Stephen Reston? Well, the good news is, Steve, that since you have physical control of the computer, you can reset that administrative password. It's not really that secure. You have to download and burn a program that you can download from Microsoft. Download the offline NT password and registry editor. You can download that from the Microsoft website. It's called the Offline NT Password and Registry Editor. It's a highly customized version of Linux. It's designed to do exactly what the name implies. It allows you to examine and edit password information in the registry of a Windows machine. Now, once you've downloaded it, you burn that program to a CD, and it basically creates a bootable CD. And then you boot on that CD, and it comes up, and you see right off the bat, Offline NT Password and Registry Editor. You see that initial screen, and then you have to select what partition you want to work on, because it's going to actually look at what hard drive, what partition. So you select the hard drive and partition that you want to work on, and it's usually the first partition. And then after that, once you select the partition you want to work on, it's going to ask you for the location of the registry, but it's going to make a guess. And it's going to guess Windows/System32/configure/config. And so that's probably the right guess. You can click on that, and it will bring up the registry. And then it's going to say, what do you want to do? And it's going to guess that you want to reset the password. Now, you have other things you could do with the registry, but it's going to guess first you're going to reset the password. So just hit Enter. And then all you have to do is just clear the password. What I do, I just clear the password. Now, it's not going to save that cleared password until you use the quit option, and then as you're quitting, it asks you to save the data to the disk. If you don't do that final operation, you won't save the data and reset the password. Now what you do, you simply take out the CD, reboot the computer, go to the administrative account, and now it has no password, and then within the user account utility, just put in whatever password you want. So you can actually reset the administrative password on somebody's machine in about 5 minutes. So if somebody thinks that they've really got great security and you have physical access to the machine and they're not in the room for 5 or 10 minutes, you can own their machine.
Oh, man. That's scary.
So physical security is everything.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So don't think that your machine is absolutely trustworthy if you don't have absolute physical security.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got an email from, oh, we got another email
from Arnie.
Yeah, we got a second email from. Did you know that on this day in history, December 9th, 1888, statistician Herman Hollerith installed the first computing device in the United States War Department? Now, that was 1888. So that's actually not an electronic computer. It was a stack of punch cards.
Uh-huh.
And by sorting the punch cards in a certain way, it was able to mechanically tabulate things. So he was basically developing methods of tabulation for the census. And that was sort of a precursor to the IBM computer.
Uh-huh.
So that's so I'm thinking that I'm going to feature, he would be a very good guy to feature on Profiles in IT maybe next week or so.
You know whose birthday it was last week?
Whose?
Amazing Grace.
Oh, Grace
yeah,
Hopper.
She's someone you featured a couple of times.
I totally missed Amazing
Grace. Yeah,
Grace
Hopper. She's 100 and some years old she would have been.
107 years old, yeah. Yep. So that's, I forgot about that. Well, listen, we love your emails. So email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll read it on the air or get back to you by electronic communication.
Mm-hmm. But chances are you're going to wind up on the radio.
You'll probably wind up on the radio. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We're just getting started. It's Saturday morning. Stay with us. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Stephen D. Crocker. Stephen D. Crocker is the creator of the Request for Comments and the author of the first RFC-1. Request for Comments, of course, are used to document protocol for the internet to share it with others and to solicit their comments about it and how it could be approved. Stephen D. Crocker was born October 15, 1944 in Pasadena, California. He went to high school with John Postel and Vince Cerf, both internet pioneers, who continued, and they continued to work together on the global internet. It was like three guys from a Los Angeles high school were really the big three that were instrumental in the development of the core technology for the internet. He received the Bachelor of Science in 1968 and a PhD in 1977, both from UCLA. As a grad student, he was there the day that the internet was born, October 29th, 1986. And Crocker was among a small group of UCLA researchers. No, 1969.
69, right, yeah.
1969, yeah. 19.
We were playing whack-a-mole with the numbers there. They're only three. Oh, blind.
1969.
Look what we have.
Oh, my goodness.
Should we...
Oh, no, man. You can see
We'll finish
Stephen Crocker first.
Stephen Crocker first.
And then I'm sure we'll get a critique from
because
Mr.
our
Bird.
Guest wants to know all about Stephen Crocker. So
yeah, he does.
He went. So he was the day the internet was born, October 29, 1969. Now, he was a small group of UCLA researchers who sent the first message between two nodes of the ARPANET. They first connected, and the ARPANET first connected four locations, UCLA, UC, Santa Barbara, SRI, and University of Utah. Now, because the network was not the main project for most of the principal investigators, in other words, they got their money working on something else, they always sent the junior guys, the guys at the bottom of the, they said, hey, listen, you know, this network thing, it's just a bunch of noise from DARPA. Would you junior guys go work on it? So they sent all these junior guys to go work on this side project, which they weren't getting really much funding for. And so a bunch of these junior guys were sitting around trying to create the rules. So they were trying to write all the rules for the internet, but they were kind of worried that if they come off, these junior guys propose the internet protocol, there's going to be some lofty professor, principal investigator, who's going to be offended that these junior guys are trying to propose what it ought to be. So Stephen Crocker was part of that group, and he was just worried about how he could do this thing. And he organized the Network Working Group, which was a forerunner of the Internet Engineering Task Force. And he was grabbed with, how can we propose these standards and not upset the PIs, the principal investigators? So he was staying with some friend's house in Pacific Palisades, and he couldn't sleep one night, and he wanted to get up and work on his project. The only place he could work without bothering the people where he was staying was like a one-bedroom apartment. He had to work in the bathroom.
Yikes.
So he went in the bathroom, and at 3 a.m. he was scribbling down notes for this communication.
Oh, boy.
And he said, okay, so he said, no.
Where's the dump button?
And so he... You know,
hand
dump,
ready.
You know, actually, dump is actually an official term if you want to dump the bits out of the stack. It's a technical term there, Jim. You know, I didn't realize you were a programmer there,
wow.
Jim.
No, I'm a.
Anybody want to wish me happy birthday?
Is it your birthday?
Well, it feels like it. I've been waiting a year to get on here. It's your show. Go. You're doing great.
I got to get Stephen out of the bathroom here. Just a minute,
please. Hurry.
Get us all out
so
of the
he said, so when he said. So he came up with this idea that, of creating these notes that were kind of informal. They wouldn't be a real publication. And you could ask questions. You could make answers. You could just put your name on it, and they would date it. And he came up with the idea, let's call it request for comment, so that it was like, so you were asking for help. So he wrote the first RFC, RFC 1, and the whole internet evolved over the RFC. All the protocols came out of it. The first one he wrote was host software, dated April 7th, 1969. Now, he went on to actually, it was 11 pages long, and a lot of what he said was ultimately improved with further RFCs, but he set the standard by which the internet protocols were developed and evolved. He's chairman of the Internet Corporation for Sign Names and Numbers, ICANN, that operates the domain name system.
That had nothing to do with being in the bathroom when he figured this out.
He's been a program manager at DARPA. He's worked at USC Information.
No, not the special button.
And, Stephen Crocker, he started a few companies. He was CTO at CyberCash, at Executive DSL, at Longitude Systems. He's currently the CEO of Shinkuro, a research and development company. He got the IEEE Internet Award in 2002 and was inducted into the Internet Hall of Fame by the Internet Society in 2012.
They got an Internet Hall of Fame?
I strive for that.
Really?
Yeah, they got the Internet Hall of Fame in 2012, and he was on the initial.
Be a fun road trip.
So there you go. The RFC process was invented at 3 a.m. in the morning in the bathroom by
goals.
Stephen Crocker.
Hey, that's cool.
Daddy don't walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop.
And we, of course, we have to introduce the Professor Emeritus.
That's right.
Thank you.
Host Emeritus properly.
Thank you so
Ladies
much.
And gentlemen,
Thank
it's
you.
David Byrd.
It's so good to
we
be
owe
here.
The pleasure.
It's good to be here in December.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's still December, right?
It's still December, isn't it? Yeah, Doc, that was beautiful, man.
Well, thank you.
Do you have any brown hair left? Do you have any brown hair left?
You didn't have it before you walked in. Doc, this is what happens when I leave the studio door open. Things just wander
in. You never know who walks in. You just don't.
We have no idea.
That's gold, Doc. That's marketing material.
That's right.
That's brochure copy.
Don't do that.
Don't encourage him. Don't encourage him. Got all your shopping done, Doc?
We were just about to talk about
I'm looking for a drone. I'm going to buy a drone for myself.
You know something?
I'm shopping for myself.
Well, those Amazon guys, they're thinking about making deliveries by drone.
I know. I want to get my own quadcopter and fly it around.
How much do those cost? Like $300, $400, something like that?
Anywhere from $100 to $1,200.
You'll get the $1,200.
I'm going to get the $1,200 one.
Because Marianne will have won that at a convention.
I'm going to put a digital camera on. I'm going to fly it around the neighborhood.
Yeah, especially in July.
That's right.
Around the pools. I know you, Doc.
Sorry, old man.
It's crazy. No, but that's something we seriously have to think about because people, there have been these little drones for sale that some, remember the little airplanes you'd be able to fly?
Yeah, sure.
Now they've stepped up their game. They got the drones with the cameras on it.
So here's the thing, the one for $1,200, now the drones have GPS stabilization. So what they do is that, you can just stop flying it, and it'll just stay at that GPS point.
Really?
Or you can send it to a particular GPS coordinate. That $1,200 one will go to GPS locations.
Looks like the $1,200 was in my future.
Which is what Amazon uses.
What are you going to do with yours?
Well, while I'm stuck on 270, I will launch the drone from the back of my car to see what the problem is.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
I can look for alternatives.
Or you could put a big magnet on it, and you could pick up whatever the problem is and move it out of the road.
Well, I think that the Amazon guy, proposal about making deliveries by drone is one of those Robert Heinlein kind of things.
Can you imagine all of the different kinds of accidents that could happen with this? I don't think they're going to actually deliver a package to your house because it could land on a baby standing
slice somebody's
out there.
Face off or something.
And so, but I do think that they'll use it to move goods between different distribution points.
Well, what good is that, moving things one at a time?
They're
going to have to deal with the Teamsters right off the bat, Doc.
It's
the FAA.
It's actually one box at a time, but it's one container at a time. Right. You can put a bunch of stuff in it.
How much weight can these things carry?
I can see delivering Victoria's Secret stuff, but not heavy.
Depends
hey,
on
what's
what it
that
is.
Look? What's that look I'm getting?
I don't know.
I'm talking commerce.
I'm back in the bathroom.
Dave, if I could suggest, you should deliver Victoria's Secret stuff personally.
That's true.
It's much more fun that way.
You really shouldn't deliver the drone.
That's half the fun, David.
You got a point there. Yeah. Huh. What was I thinking?
You can't deliver cinder blocks with these things, right?
No, or hammers or that
anvils.
Kind of stuff. Hey, here's your new vacuum cleaner.
Here's your new Volkswagen.
Exactly.
So they're talking like if Amazon may have distribution centers that are 10 miles apart, and so they have already robotics that will collect stuff and put it in boxes,
right?
And then they got to move it to another distribution point. So essentially, they can extend their robotic collection out, maybe 10 miles or so.
Yeah, but if you're living in Columbia, Maryland, you do not want to be in the middle of their distribution points with drones flying over your backyard. That's going to be a problem, don't you think?
It could be a problem.
Because you can't get higher than the FAA allows you to be for planes and that kind of thing, so it'll have to be lower.
Yeah,
we're dealing with privacy.
The government's going to get involved in this somehow.
Of course,
they're not going to. FAA is not going to.
I think the government's going to get involved. They'll probably have drone pathways where they'll probably regulate it where you have drone helicopter
routes, and there are routes for the airliners to follow.
There will be a drone way. Yes,
there'll be no flying kites in this drone way. I mean, this is crazy. I see it happening.
It opens up a whole new can of worms.
I want my own drone.
I bet you do.
So I want my own drone. I'm getting a GPS drone.
Oh, man.
Now, one of the other problems, if you take movies with the drone, because the drone kind of vibrates.
Right.
So the movies look like they're sort of
shaking like
jelly. Right. So you have to have a
GPS stabilization with sort of a
liquid interface so that it damps out the vibrations.
A liquid interface where it drowns out the interference.
That's
gold, Doc.
That's radio gold.
That's radio gold.
I feel like Pee Wee Herman talking to Mark Twain here. I am so out of my league down here. Why do I come down here?
He's going to develop the liquid interface.
The liquid And he says it with a straight face. I know. I don't know if he's putting this on or not. That's how crazy I am.
After he's finished with this, then he's going to develop the space elevator.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Mm. The space. Okay, we'll call it
a liquid interface.
If you have a drone, you won't need the space elevator.
No, you won't.
Oh, you will need the space elevator.
Doc, I just want to say happy holidays to you guys. Well, I have to run on you.
But thank you. Same to you, sir.
It's been fun. It really has. The liquid interface.
So what does David Byrd want to find under his Christmas tree?
I just want peace and prosperity for everyone.
Oh, listen to this garbage.
And some cash. That's all. All right.
That's some cash.
Bye, guys.
David, happy holidays to you. Thanks for stopping in. Hey, he looks so festive today in his holiday turtleneck.
Oh,
look at that.
Yes.
David Byrd, everybody. Host emeritus of Tech Talk Radio. Heard every week on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. We'll be back. Hope you were paying attention. Oh, about a month or so ago, we were talking about Stephen Crocker, and we'll have a quiz about him in just a minute on Tech Talk. Stay with us.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz. That's you.
Welcome back to the Classroom of the Airways, also known as a radio show. But now it's moved to Classroom of the Airways because we're going to do some assessment. Now, that's frequently called a pop quiz. Mm-hmm. To get the right answer to the pop quiz, you'll get two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. And you will also get an A-plus for this segment of the show. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Stephen D. Crocker. He's, of course, the creator of Request for Comments, and he authored the first RFC. Where was Stephen located when he wrote the policies for Request for Comment and came up with the original idea? This is a critical question.
And the one way to get that answer to us right now is to call us on your POTS line, your plain old telephone. Right? And if you're calling from west of Pasadena, California, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of Pasadena, Maryland, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333. And, of course, if you're a show-off, Doc.
That's right. If you're calling from the Alps, for instance, you might want to use Skype. And you could simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that will be forwarded directly to your studio, directly to the studio, free of charge. Now, I want to go back. We've been talking about Request for Comment. I'd like to go back to Request for Comment 968, written by Vince Cerf in December of 1985. The RFC was titled, "'Twas the Night Before Startup." "'Twas the night before startup and all through the net. Not a packet was moving. No bit or octet. The engineers rattled their cards in despair, hoping a bad chip would blow with a flare. Salesmen were all nestled snug in their beds while visions of data danced in their heads. And I, with my datascope, tracings, and dumps, prepared for some pretty bad bruises and lumps. When out of the hall there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my desk to see what was the matter. There stood at the threshold with a PC in tow, an ARPANET hacker, all ready to go. I could see from the creases that covered his brow, he'd conquer the crisis confronting him now. More rapid than eagles, he checked each alarm and scrutinized each for its potential harm. On LAP B, on OSI, X.25, TCP, SNA, V.35. His eyes were aflare with the strength of his gaze. No bug could hide long, not for hours or days. A wink of his eye and a twitch of his head soon gave me to know I had little to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, fixing a net that had gone plumb berserk. And laying a finger on one suspect line, he entered a patch, and the net came up fine. The packets flowed neatly and protocols matched. The hosts interfaced and shift registers latched. He tested the system from gateway to pad. Not one bit was dropped. No checksum was bad. At last he was finished and warily sighed, and he turned to explain why the net by the system had died. I twisted my finger and counted to 10, and off by one digit had done it again. And there you go. 'Twas the Night Before Startup by Vint Cerf, authored in December of 1985.
There you go. This is a pretty easy question. This is kind of like, you know, it's midterms and everybody's fried.
It's kind of an easy giveaway question, but you still get the full prize.
Exactly. So let's go to Sally on line two, calling from Alexandria. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Yes. Go ahead, Doc.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about Stephen D. Crocker, who was the creator of the Request for Comment system. Where did he come up with the idea for Request for Comments?
In the bathroom.
That is correct.
Sally, thanks a lot.
Two tickets to Fine Dining at the Escoffier Dinner at the Karim Dining Room. Stay on the line.
Yes, and we will have adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, Kevin Stansfield, today, and for Andrew Mitchell. He will take your information. Sally, thank you for listening. Thank you for playing the game, and happy holidays to you and yours. Stand by for Kevin. And you're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2. And we shall return with more of Tech Talk right after this. Stand by.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now let's talk tech gifts that teach.
Yes.
I've been a little tired of too many games and too many tech gifts, so-called tech gifts, where the kids really don't learn any technology. So here are a few gifts where they're going to learn something. One of the first is Little Bits. Little Bits. These are tiny circuit boards that snap together with magnets. You can make an alarm clock. You can make a hopping bunny. Or you can make a light-up whale-shaped tissue box that wags its tail. It's whatever you want to think of. Now, the base kit is $99. The deluxe kit is $199. I mean, these are actually, it makes learning electronics fun. You can go to, the website is littlebits.cc, littlebits.cc. The next one will be Snap Circuits. Now, they have a variety of kits from the basic to the remote control rover. Now, these toys actually will, the kids come back and use them again and again, and it turns out the kids are able to figure out these circuits quite well. Now, they have kits ranging from $35 to $135, and these are snapcircuits.net. Now, my favorite, and I mentioned it last week, I'm going to mention it, is Lego Mindstorms. Now, Lego, mm-hmm. this takes the Lego kit to a different level. Kids get a programmable heart of a robot, along with instructions, and they've got all of the motors and everything else to put together a real robot. And they can create things anywhere from, like, shooting Lego missiles, or you could do something that would spy on your brother. I mean, now, the Mindstorms, if you have Mindstorms, you can also join the first Lego League kit, and then you can do competitions, robot competitions. Now, these kits range from $300 to $460. Jay, I love these kits. They're well worth the price. It's a great, father-son or mother-daughter kind of activity. You go to mindstorms.lego.com, and then we have Kodu. Kodu is a visual programming language that allows kids to create their own video games on the Xbox. Instead of just having them play on the Xbox, why don't they create a game for the Xbox? Or they could create a game for the PC. Now, if you've got an Xbox, why don't you get them this $5 book, Kodu for Kids, the official guide to creating your own video games. And it's an inexpensive way to transform your Xbox into a learning platform for your kids. Then how about this, the Big Shot Camera Kit. Now, no doubt your child knows how to use a digital camera, but they really know how they work. This way, with Big Shot, you can actually build your own camera. It's got an image sensor. You can learn how light is converted to a digital image. The kit costs $89. I've got all the pieces there, and it's actually quite convenient, and you learn something about digital photography. Then we've got the Arduino Robot Kit. The Arduino is an open-source physical computing platform that allows users to write software that controls a physical board. The Arduino robot has two fully programmable boards, one for the motors and one for the sensors, and you can communicate with it via USB. It's a great gift. It's sort of their first cousin. It's a Raspberry Pi, which is another programmable board that I've talked about before. The starter kit is $100. You get the robot kit for $200. You go to store.arduino.cc. That would be arduino.cc. I'll have all of these links on the site, but I believe if you give gifts like this early enough, you can actually get little techies right in your house instead of just game players.
Instead of game-playing slugs.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the gifts that I like.
Yeah, of course, yes. Now, you got to promise me that if you get one of these, you got to bring it in here so we can play with it.
We'll fly it. Are we allowed to fly it in the studio?
You brought
the
blimp in here.
I bought the blimp, but this has four blades, Jim.
How about when you become proficient on it, you can bring it in here?
The blimp, all I could do is pop it.
Well, do you think you could do that much damage in here with it?
I doubt it.
Bring it.
I doubt it.
Why don't
you check with legal on that?
I'll check with legal, but you just bring it in. I'll sign a waiver, so if you take out an eye, I'll be all right.
Maybe we'll fly it in the next room with Andrew.
There's that idea. We have the hallway.
We've got the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So I can have a camera on it. So we could fly it around WTOP radio upstairs.
We could do that, and we could post the video on Tech Talk. And
that's right.
See what it looked like.
Okay, here we go. Quadcopter gift guide. Mm-hmm. Now there are a lot of quadcopters, and some are for beginners and some are not. So I'm going all the way from $100 up to $1,200.
We know which end you'll be on.
The $1,200. I want the Phantom Vision. The $1,200. That's what I want. So for under $100, you got the Blade Nano QX. It's a micro quad with great little features. You can get that from Amazon for under $100.
Will they deliver it by
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Blade Nano, and that qualifies as a great beginner one. You've got the Hubsan X4 H10 H107L. It's an updated version of a very small micro quad, very popular. Also from Amazon. They're both for under $100. You can look at the style that you want. Hubsan X4 H107L. And then you've got a mini quadcopter with a six-axis stability, which is the WL Toys V212-222. The 222 is with a camera, and the 212 is without a camera. That's under $100. That's mm-hmm. also good for a beginner. Now, for under $200, which, of course, implies it's more than $100.
Yes, because that would be implied.
We've moved out of the $100 category.
And now into what you're saying is...
That's right.
It's more than $100.
More than $100 and under $200. We got the I1 Extreme brushless. It's a high-quality quadcopter. But that is not really for beginners. You're really going to kind of work up to it. You've got the Parrot AR drone. Now, this has a new GPS add-on and a flight recorder. That's around $400.
Now, a flight recorder?
It's got a flight recorder, yeah. Now, for between $400 and $500, you've got the DJI Phantom. That's the original model. It's on sale for under $500. You've got the Blade 350QX. That's the advanced quadcopter with GPS. So you see, when you get above $400, you start picking up the GPS capability,
mm-hmm.
which I think is pretty important. You know, because you got GPS, they'll do auto-homing. They'll come back to where they took off.
Sure.
You go between $500 and $600, you got the Walkera QR. It's a full-size quadcopter with GPS, and it has a large payload. It can carry more. For under $900, which would be between $800 and $900, it's the 3DR yes. Iris. That's an advanced programmable expandable quadcopter from 3D Robotics. Now, the one that I want is the $1,200 one, mm-hmm. so I'm just working up to that one.
Yes.
It's the new Phantom Vision. It's a complete solution. It's a ready-to-fly quadcopter. It includes high-quality still and video camera. It has telemetry and much more. So you can buy this, fly it, and it's like ready to go. And if you lose control of it, it will come back to the place that it was launched by you know, just through a GPS returning system.
So when you break this thing out, I guess Marianne goes to the movies.
Yeah, see, mm-hmm. I can fly, you know, although I did read there was one guy where the GPS failed. He put a $500 camera on one of these quadcopters, and he paid around $1,200 for it, and it went up, and he lost it. It went out of range, and the GPS homing failed, and it just flew off. He lost his quadcopter and his camera.
No idea where it went.
He has no idea.
Oh,
where.
Man,
and then
that's
when it finally came down, for some reason, he didn't get it returned.
Now,
so this actually, the electronics and the stabilization on these quadcopters has really improved. Now you can really get these remote, these remote RPVs that will actually work.
Do they run on rechargeable batteries?
Yeah, you charge them up, and they might run, 10 to 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not...
You can't fly all day with this thing.
No, it's a show you can... But I've seen some pictures from these that are just fantastic. People will shoot... They'll fly around their neighborhood above the treetop high, so they get these beautiful views. They'll come in and they'll land... And I've seen some absolutely fantastic videos, like at the beach. People will go up and they'll come down, and you can get the most unique angles. But if you're if you're flying around the beach, you don't want to crash in the water. You got your camera there.
Yeah.
And one of the issues when you start taking video or any kind of digital is the vibration of the copter, and that's why you have to have this vibration damping mount. Which is just basically a liquid pillow.
So, do you think at some point, as these things become more prevalent, the FAA is going to get involved in regulating these things?
Yeah, I think the FAA. I think they're going to say maybe you can fly these without regulation up to 100 feet or mm-hmm. something. If you go above 100 feet, you've got to be licensed. They'll have some sort of altitude on them.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, how high will they theoretically go?
Sky's
the limit.
Yeah, the sky's the limit. I mean, it really depends on how your battery, how long your battery lasts mm-hmm. when they go up. So, the thing is, FAA doesn't regulate kites.
Sure.
You know, I mean, they don't regulate kites, but you can't fly a kite around an airport probably because if you're in the flight path. So they probably regulate around flight paths of airports.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to think these remotely piloted systems, they're going to have some altitude. That you can't go above a certain altitude in order to fly them. Probably the insurance companies could get involved too because having these quadcopters. They land on a small child or something. It could be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm still going to get one.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, you're a responsible individual.
Because I want to play with these things.
I don't blame you.
So
it's research.
So when I was young, I used to launch hot air balloons. That was my favorite thing, launching hot air balloons. Maybe when I come back, I'll tell some of those stories.
That sounds like a good idea. All right, let's take a short break. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'll just give a quick rundown of some of the hot air balloons I used to do when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
I would get the dry cleaning plastic bags, and I would actually take maybe 5 or 6 bags, slit them on the side, and tape them together into one large balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a superstructure down at the bottom made out of soda straws that I got from McDonald's. And I cut slits in those, and I stuck in birthday candles. And I would have this X of birthday candles. I would light them, and then the whole balloon would lift up. And the birthday candles would not blow out because if the wind would blow on the balloon, it would tilt, and the balloon would protect the candles from burning out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would launch these at night, and it would look like a flying saucer.
Oh, wow, because they'd be lit up,
because
right?
All these little candles equally spaced along this X looked like windows. And so at a distance, it looked like this unidentified flying object is drifting across the city.
How are you when you did this?
I was probably in seventh or eighth grade. And so I would go out every night and I would launch this to trying to get people to report the UFOs because they'd just be drifting across the city and they would really stand out.
So you just let it go until it burned out and crashed, right?
I'd never get it again, no, because it would just be gone. But you know, I used 1 hour Martinizing bags that are free. And sometimes I would make the 1 hour Martinizing bag. If I'd launch it in the day, so it wasn't a UFO, I would make the 1 hour Martinizing bag sort of shaped like a big snowman with arms sticking out. And you look at it, and there's this giant snowman that would be floating up there. Now, people knew that wasn't a UFO.
Right, of course. They knew it was little Ricky Schertz being a pest.
Now, if I wanted to get really a long distance flight on my hot air balloon, I would use a can of Sterno.
But
I'm thinking to myself, man,
that would create enough lift to get that can of Sterno off.
But
the
I'm
ground?
thinking, I never would do that now. I'm thinking a can of Sterno
could
come down on top of a house and cause a fire.
Oh, sure could.
But see, back when I was in the seventh grade, I wasn't thinking like that. But now I'm thinking, man.
That was pretty dangerous.
Yeah. I don't think my parents knew I was up to that stuff.
That was my next question. What was your parents' reaction to this? There was none.
They didn't know about
there
that.
There you go, latchkey
That's
child
right.
you were.
I know. So now, it turns out that Pinterest has really been a great source of holiday gift guides. You know how Pinterest, you pin stuff on?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are all sorts of holiday gift guides on Pinterest. And so you can go to Pinterest now, and they have what they call giving guides, and you can shop for a particular, like a nerd or mother or a young child, and you can come up with these bulletin boards that have all sorts of gift suggestions on it. And that has been very successful. I mean, they've got one board called for Man Cave Dweller, if you want to get something for your husband. And that includes a bar tool set, baseball chair, coffee table. They've got one called Roller Derby Girls. So this is actually, if you're just stumped on what to get somebody, go to Pinterest and kind of look around those gift guides, and you'll get some good ideas. I thought that was something new this year that hasn't been there. Now, of course, this is the year of, if you're not going to get them an iPad, a tablet, you're going to have to get them maybe a laptop. And laptops are interesting. You can get the Chromebook for as cheap as $279.
Wow.
But you know what's interesting, and I've just been seeing the advertisements for the Microsoft Windows Surface. You know,
that thing has got the Snap-on
the Surface.
Keyboard
I mean,
thingy.
They're trying to compete with the Chromebook, and they're dropping the price of that Surface down to like $300
wow.
or something. That actually is becoming, because they're trying to compete with Chromebook, quite a good deal.
Huh.
They've got the Acer Aspire. It's an 11.6-inch screen. That's for $400 on Amazon. You get Sony Vaio 14e. That's a 14-inch screen. That's for $500 on from Sony. As you go up to the mid-range, you can get Lenovo IdeaPad. That's $799 from Lenovo. That's a 14-inch screen. It includes a Core i5 CPU. It's got 8 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte hard drive. Sony Vaio 14, that's a 14-inch screen, dual core, 2 gigahertz CPU, 8 or 12 gigabytes of RAM, and so it's got a solid-state hard drive, but now we're getting up to a $1,000 price range, and of course the price is no object. You got Sony Vaio Pro for $1,150, and that's all with solid-state hard drives. Mac Pro with Retina display, that's going to be $1,300. So you can go anywhere from like $300 up to $1,400, depending on what your price preference might
sure.
be. This was the Hour of Code campaign, sponsored by Code.org this week. Code.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting computer science. Its new campaign, Code of Hour, targeted 10 million high school students in the USA, and it ran from December 9th to December 15th. And Code.org asked schools, teachers, and parents for help in motivating the students to look at what lies ahead with computer programming. And the Code of Hour, it's a challenge to educators to teach their students a one-hour lesson designed to demystify code. I'm kind of on this thing, too. I think we got to get kids writing code.
Mm-hmm.
This campaign was sponsored by Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, all the Silicon Valley folks, because they need people to write code so they can develop their companies. And so the code.org, it provides for teachers online tutorials. It provides a support platform to support the teachers as they delivered their product. It's also awarding prizes to classrooms that participate, including 10 gigabytes of free storage from Dropbox for the first 100,000 educators that host a Code of Hour. 50 schools that participate will win a full set of computers, with one winner in each state. So that's a great initiative to try to get kids to program, from code.org, the Hour of the Code. Well, listen, the show's over. We had a lot of fun, and you learned something,
yep.
a little bit of technology, something about gifts. Listen, we love your comments. Email us to techtalk@stratford.edu, and check out the Stratford programs by going to stratford.edu and say that you heard about them on Tech Talk.
Tuned in late. Want to hear the show again? We'll replay this broadcast here on Federal News Radio at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Have a good week.
paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Stay with us on Federal News Radio. Army-Navy game coming up from Philadelphia. Kickoff is at 3:30, pregame at 1:30 here on Federal News Radio. Then the Wizards take on the Clippers tonight at 6:45. The weather forecast, rain, snow, sleet this morning, changing the rain by the afternoon. Right now, 35 outside our studios in Northwest at 10 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.